So, middle of the night, we had what was called the Twitter files. Now, that's not someone that loves Twitter. No, what's happened is, I'm sure you've heard about Elon Musk buying everyone's favorite social media platform. And I've done a number of videos of it. One was released today on the YouTube channel called From Musk Till Dawn. There's also a From Musk Till Dawn 2. If you don't know anything about that, take some time, watch those videos. You'll get everything you need to know and all the incredible reactions to it. You'll get it all in about, you know, under 2 hours. But he's bought it, hasn't he? He went ahead, he bought it, and he's made lots of changes. Now, his principal reasons for buying Twitter, even though he did try to get himself out of buying it, but then was pushed into buying it with an agreement. He didn't want to get jammed up with litigation, so he bought it at the nominal price of $44 billion, which seems a little overvalued to me. But then again, I'm not the richest man in the world, so who knows, right? But, you know, he bought it and made a bunch of changes. There's been non-stop screeching. Now, one of the reasons why is he said he felt that Twitter was so important because it had become a sort of de facto town square for everyone on the internet. Indeed, I think Jack Dorsey described it as Twitter is the closest thing we have at the moment to a collective consciousness. And I suppose in a way that's true, but it's also terrifying. If you think about it, there was an incident with the Babylon Bee. The Babylon Bee is a Christian, right-leaning, satirical website, and they awarded a transgender individual in the military, a male-to-female transgender individual, they awarded them Man of the Year, which seems a bit spiteful and pointless, really, you know, but they did it, and they were suspended and told they had to delete the tweet, which they refused to do because they said it's not misgendering someone to correctly refer to their biological gender. So they refused to do it. And Elon Musk said, yeah, I don't know about that, actually, them being banned for that, especially as they're a satire site. Satire is a type of protected speech. So there was that. The other big instance was obviously the Hunter Biden laptop story. Now, the Hunter Biden laptop story, to me, is the most egregious example of big tech overreach with political operative collusion I've probably seen in my lifetime. Again, I did a video about this and I lost thousands of subs off the YouTube channel over it because I did it at the time the laptop story came out. It was published in the New York Post, America's oldest newspaper. People didn't want to accept the idea that through a salacious scandal about the president and his crack-addicted son, that Donald Trump would somehow squeeze back into the White House for a second term. So people decided to deny even their most basic senses, which was that the laptop, of course, was genuine, and it hadn't been illegally obtained, and the information contained on the laptop, which included emails that strongly, strongly suggest Joe Biden was effectively selling access to the vice presidency by getting his son a no-show job at an energy company in Ukraine called Burisma, and was taking a skim off the top of the exorbitant salary he was making. 10% for the big guy is the famous phrase in one of the emails with the business dealings. That to me is a huge scandal. I don't care about Hunter Biden having sex with prostitutes. I don't care about Hunter Biden smoking crack. This is of no interest to me. Have at it, sir. But the stuff around the business dealings, the stuff around the potential misuse of the Department of Justice related to a potential firearm offense Hunter Biden might have been involved in, this information was information relating to these matters was also on the laptop, and it should have been a story that was disseminated and discussed ahead of the election in 2020. And again, I will always just put this example out there. If that was Donald Trump Jr., there is absolutely no question whatsoever that not only would it have been deemed important and allowed on social media sites, it would have dominated the news cycle until election day. And you have to know that. So I made all these points in a video. People just didn't like it because Trump is such a reprehensible, disagreeable, and thoroughly unlikable man in the eyes of the majority that they didn't. That people wanted to say I'd been fooled by Russian disinformation. But of course, I hadn't been fooled by Russian disinformation because I am not a fucking moron. I saw through the Steele dossier immediately. And again, go back and look at my videos about this. Meanwhile, TV networks were giving losers like fucking Tom Arnold fucking documentary TV shows to go and search for a non-existent pee-pee tape. It's very clear what is and isn't disinformation if you actually follow these things and have followed them for a while. And this had none of the hallmarks. Indeed, if you knew the story about how the laptop actually got into the possession of Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani, it's this. And I just corrected someone on the YouTube channel today. In fact, let me show you what they said. I'll read it to you. They like this is how these lies persist, because people just repeat the lazy narrative. Richard, I'm a big fan, but the Hunter Biden issue is it was hacked material. And that is against the terms of service of Twitter. They did, after a while, fix their mistake and said it was an error. Right? So, complete nonsense. It was in no way hacked materials. Hunter Biden, a crackhead, bricked his laptop somehow, went to a repair store, gave the repairman the laptop, gave him the password to access the laptop, signed a waiver to say, yes, you may access the laptop and all of the information within. That signature, by the way, used as part of the evidence to show it was indeed his laptop. The repairman, who was obviously a Republican, saw things on there that concerned him, or if you want to be uncharitable, he realized he could use, come the election, he contacted other people that he knew that might be able to get him in touch with political operatives. Eventually, Bannon and Giuliani found it. They kept referring to it as the October surprise or whatever the fuck it was. And they were going to drop it just before the election for maximum impact deliberately. That's what happened. Those are the facts. Twitter didn't like that, right? And so they essentially suppressed the story. And if you were there at the time, and as is covered in my previous video on it, they didn't just suppress the story. Let's talk about the extraordinary measures Twitter went to stop this story going around Twitter and other social media outlets as it happened, because they were so worried it might move the dial back towards Trump in what they thought was going to be a close election, even with all the ballot harvesting that was going on after they had all the pandemic voting rules brought in for early mail-in ballots. So the first thing they did was they removed the tweet. And then locked the New York Post. They stopped you being able to see the tweet. And then locked the New York Post out of their official Twitter account. That was step number one. New York Post obviously said this is a well-sourced and well-researched story of national, if not international, importance. We're absolutely not going to delete the tweet circulating that story. Twitter then banned the journalist that wrote the story, temporarily locked him out of his account. They temporarily locked other journalists out of their accounts from other publications, not just the New York Post, for retweeting it. Then they even went one further, and anybody that was caught posting photos from it or links to the New York Post or any rewrites of the news story on any other publication, you were banned on site. You were banned on site for doing that. I sat there on that day and I was watching dozens of accounts disappear in real time. They were just going. They were like, hey, look, here's a picture of Hunter Biden smoking crack. They were gone within 30 minutes, just gone. The account was suspended. They spent all day doing that. And then, because they realized that people were then DMing it to people. They made the link to the New York Post in your DMs flag up as if it was a virus or phishing link. They said the link is harmful, you can't post the message. I have never seen them do that, even for actual disinformation. I have never seen them do that for anything. Keep in mind, if you remember the adpocalypse on YouTube, it came out at that time that Twitter was it was an ISIS recruitment hotbed. There were open ISIS recruitment accounts with beheading montages on Twitter that they refused to take down. There was child porn being circulated on it. That's why they're currently in a lawsuit right this moment. And people saw it and worked at Twitter and refused to remove it. So understand the outrage, right? And you should be outraged if you care about journalism. It's not even just a freedom of speech thing. That fucking phrase has become so fucking blasé and loaded and tainted. You should just be absolutely outraged that to assist their political candidate of preference to win a presidency, they were willing to go to measures they wouldn't go to stop radicalized terrorists or child predators. They pushed all their chips into the middle. So that is why it's an important story. That is why it matters. That is why it's an outrage. And honestly, I might even go so far as to say I would feel very comfortable if some of the people that took this type of action faced some sort of punitive measure, because you're getting awful close to China and North Korea when you start doing things like that. That is a slippery slope you don't want to start sliding down, even though I know it's too late for that. Twitter also colluded with Facebook. They held a meeting. They all get together in their big tech meetings. And they basically, alongside Facebook, they came out in lockstep to give them a stronger position. Facebook suppressed the article as well. And that was done because Twitter said publicly, oh yeah, by the way, did we mention just before this, the FBI came to us and said, oh yeah, watch out for Russian disinformation ahead of the election. So Elon Musk bought Twitter and he said that I'm going to get transparency for that thing that happened regarding Hunter Biden's laptop. And he said yesterday, we're going to release it at 5 p.m., you know, West Coast time or whatever the fuck it was. And I'm going to do it through a proxy journalist. And he did it through Matt Taibbi, who it was a trip watching his account. Like, just he went from having like a few hundred thousand followers, like, to he's got north of a million now. And he was the independent journalist, and he's done lots of work down the years. He occupied Wall Street Reporter, you know, blah blah blah. He was the guy who dropped. He was approached by Elon Musk. He dropped what he was doing. He flew to the Twitter headquarters. He was given access to work emails around that decision. And under supervision from Elon Musk, he was essentially allowed to present important information, relevant information about the decision-making process, and crucially, whether or not it was influenced by the DNC. Now, he decided to release it in the worst fucking format imaginable. It was excruciating. He was putting out numerical tweets bit by bit, including additional context. And it took forever. So I was sat there going, for fuck's sake, why not just write this on your Substack and publish it all in one? But I sat there and I waited and I waited and I waited. And fortunately, other bloggers have picked up all the tweets and put them into a format that's clear and easy to read. So we'll get into the Twitter files. Thread, the Twitter files. That was a whole tweet, right? You had to wait, like, I don't know, how many minutes? 5 minutes to the next one. I was going to say five. Yeah, you had to wait about 5 minutes. He went, thread, the Twitter files. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a joke at first. I thought Elon Musk, this is his ultimate shit post. Because watch the introduction, right? What you're about to read, like, mate, I know why I'm here. I'm fucking, I know. I don't need the foreplay. Just stick it in. I'm ready. I was, let's go. Like, come on. Right, what you're about to read is the first installment in a series based upon thousands of internal documents obtained by sources at Twitter. The Twitter files tell an incredible story. Brilliant. Yeah, you tell me the fucking story then, mate. Don't tell me it's going to be incredible. From inside one of the world's largest and most influential social media platforms, it is a Frankensteinian tale of a human-built mechanism growing out, the control of its designer. Twitter, in its conception, was a brilliant tool. Elon must have wrote this. For enabling instant mass communication, making a true real-time global conversation possible for the first time. In an early conception, Twitter more than lived up to its mission statement, giving people the power to create and share ideas and information instantly without barriers. Now, look, at that point, this is where I was like, nah, I'm out, actually. I might just go to sleep. Oh, fuck this. But fortunately for me, I'm an insomniac. So I couldn't anyway. So I just sat there with my laptop, just giving me the wanker's tan onto my face. Just watching this fucking slow, meandering introduction, right? As time progressed, however, the company was slowly forced to add those barriers. Some of the first tools for controlling speech were designed to combat the likes of spam and financial fraudsters. Slowly over time, Twitter staff and executives began to find more and more uses for these tools. Outsiders began petitioning the company to manipulate speech as well. First a little, then more often, then constantly. Now, this is the first tweet of any value, right, whatsoever. By 2020, by 20 minutes later, requests from connected actors to delete tweets were routine. One executive would write to another, more to review from the Biden team. The reply would come back, handled. And these are some of the tweets. Now, I looked at these tweets. Most of them are Hunter Biden's penis. So, and like I say, he's got a great penis. I've seen it a lot now. Not as much as Van Pater's penis, but Hunter Biden's is probably outside after, like, put it this way, it goes my own Van Pater, Hunter Biden is the most penis I've seen. And he has got a tight dick player. It's great. But anyway, these tweets are mostly his penis. There's one, I think, by that guy Squigs there, because I looked at these. I put them into archives. And that one was just him. It was Joe Biden wearing a mask. And he'd replied saying, at least if you're wearing that, you can't sniff kids. He does sniff kids a lot. I don't know why that would be a bannable offence. But anyway, they said handled. And so here's what we know, and I'll link this to the Intercept reporting as well, in a moment. Here's what we know, that Biden's political team had access via back-channeling methods not available to other people, and Trump had it as well. Obviously, the White House had it, and Trump was in the White House at this time. And they were able to demand suspensions and removal of tweets from Twitter users that were complied with almost without question, it seems. Now, I saw a lot of, everyone's a legal expert now, and lots, and Elon Musk himself is trying to say, this is a clear violation of the First Amendment. The government, it's like, they weren't the government, they were a political party. So, that kind of has to matter in this interpretation of events. But is it good? No. Should there be action taken? Of course, yeah. This is political operatives, and that's why I use that phrase. Political parties working in lockstep with big tech, and it's obviously continued, as we know, with the Alex Berenson case, to suppress people's freedom of expression. And so it's not Twitter saw you violating the terms of service, so they ban you. That's fine. It's a government operative or a political operative, a government representative has tapped them on the shoulder and gone, yeah, get rid of that. It's really inconvenient for us. Joe does sniff kids a lot and he's out of his fucking mind with dementia, but can't have people just openly saying it. You know what I mean? It like might make people lose confidence in the God Emperor, might cost us some votes. You know what I mean? And the worst part is, unfortunately, that you can see the quid pro quo because if the government, like if the government that gets in, you know, that they're in, they're elected, they're in charge, well, you're not getting called up for fucking ethics committee meetings, and you're not getting hit with investigations. You might not have bills passed that are really inconvenient for your business. This is how it works. This is literally the machine of the American uniparty at work. You know, it's just that's how it goes. You give us what we need now, we'll get you on the comeback when we're in power. There it is. Anyway, 9. Celebrities and unknowns alike could be removed or reviewed at the behest of a political party. You can see this email here. It's a link to Stephen Luhuan, who I don't know if that's anyone important, but you'll recognise this name. Real James Woods. James Woods starred in some great movies. Salvador, Videodrome, he's done it all. He's done it all. He's great. Once Upon a Time in America. Classics. But he's a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. And again, if you look at the tweets that got him suspended, it's like, I think he got suspended in the end for, like, quoting somebody. I can't even remember which writer it was. But it was, like, a quote, and they blocked him out of his account. And he was locked out for months and months and months because he refused to delete it. And yeah, I don't know how anybody could make the argument about, oh, no, Twitter used to suspend accounts equally. I just used to watch that. Like, you would just, any vaguely right-wing account that got popular on Twitter was essentially on borrowed time. Don't forget, it wasn't that long ago. They banned Defiant L's. He just suspended for no reason. Back now, of course, but was just suspended for no reason. And literally, all Defiant L's does, despite the fact it was banned for causing harm, is it takes people's tweets, takes a screenshot of them, and retweets them. It's only stuff that's already on the platform. It doesn't express any opinions. It doesn't say anything that they didn't say. It's their own words just presented as the juxtaposition of they went one way here when it was Dems, they went the other way here when it was Republicans. That's all it is. Any vaguely right-wing account was just on borrowed time right from the get-go. Yet every time a popular left-wing account got banned by an algorithm, right? And everyone would say, you know, yeah, this is what we're talking about, right? It's not good, is it? But it would get corrected in, like, hours. It would just be like, you know. Meanwhile, as I said, they even went so far as there was an account called Mini AOC, which is cringe as fuck. But it was an account that had a little girl that would dress up like AOC and just say stupid things because they're obviously awful parents just politicizing their own child for cheap laughs. But they banned that account for impersonation. Which, in a way, that's an insult to AOC, isn't it? The idea that you could confuse AOC's thoughts with the thoughts of an 8-year-old child. So, all right, yeah. Guess you've owned us. Yeah, well done. Fucking weird, right? So, don't take anyone seriously who said it was, like, equally balanced and moderation was done, you know, in a fair and even-handed way. It just wasn't. It just wasn't. I've been suspended out of my account, although that was due to crazies reporting it. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. It was like they make you sign a little fucking thing saying, oh, I promise not to be naughty again and improve. And they don't even start the suspension countdown until you sign that. So you have to admit you did something wrong, even if you get false flagged. It's why I just block everybody. That's the other part nobody realizes. If you block somebody, they can't report your tweet as easily. They have to be logged in to report the tweet, and if they're blocked and they can't see it, they can't report it. So when you're getting false flagged, you just block everybody, and then they have to go and fill in a form. 10. Both parties had access to these tools. That's obviously the back channeling to Twitter. For instance, in 2020, requests from both the Trump White House and the Biden campaign were received and honored. However, this system wasn't balanced. It was based on contacts because Twitter was and is overwhelmingly staffed by people of one political orientation. There were more channels, more ways to complain open to the left, well, Democrats, than the right. And you can see here, this is a screenshot of Open Secrets. Open Secrets is all the campaign donations made by individuals and entities. These are the contributions by Twitter employees, and you can see how by 2022, Republicans only get $451 in donations, 0.27% Republican representation there, and it was only 3.62% back in 2018. Pretty skewed, right? But again, I don't think that's an important point. 12. The resulting slant in content moderation decisions is visible in documents you're about to read. So finally, we're going to get to see something you would think would be important. However, it's also the assessment of multiple current and former high-level executives. Then someone went weird because he did this tweet and he said there was more throat clearing about the process, but screw it, let's jump forward. And so I don't know what was in 13, 14, and 15, but for whatever reason, he's been told not to tweet it. We get to number 16, the Twitter files again. It's like playing one of those super massive games where it's just title card, title card, title card, cutscene. Is there a game under here? The Twitter files, part one. How and why Twitter blocked the Hunter Biden laptop story. On October 14, 2020, the New York published Biden's secret emails and expose based on the contents of Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop. Twitter took extraordinary steps to suppress the story, removing links and posting warnings that it may be unsafe. They even blocked its transmission via direct message, a tool hitherto reserved for extreme cases such as child pornography. The White House spokeswoman, oh, I forgot about this part as well, Kayleigh McEnany, was locked out of her account for tweeting about the story, prompting a furious letter from Trump campaign staffer Mike Hahn, who seethed at least pretend to care for the next 20 days. Now, think about that. That was the White House press secretary, I believe she was at the time. She was locked out of her official account for tweeting about a news story. That's how insane it was. Like, anyway, that's the email here saying Kayleigh McEnany has been locked out from her account for simply talking about the New York Post story. All she did was cite the story in first-hand reporting that has been reported by other outlets and not disputed by the Biden campaign. By the way, still to this day, the Biden campaign and laterally the Biden White House have never denied its authenticity. Only journalists and intelligence operatives have done that for them. The Bidens themselves have never been drawn on it, never said it's fake, never denied an email, never addressed any of it. And of course, we've got such a pathetic, maggoty journalistic class. You know, they're never going to get took to task. They're never going to get asked any tough questions. I need an answer immediately on when, how she will be unlocked. I also don't apprecate. I guess he did it on his phone. Angry. Benefit of the doubt there. How anybody on this team called me regarding the news that you'll be censoring news articles. Like I said, at least pretend to care for the next 20 days. This led public policy executive Caroline Strom to send out a polite tweet, polite what the fuck query. Several employees noted that there was tension between the comms policy teams, who had a little less control over moderation and the safety and trust teams. And you can see there. Hi, can you have a look at this? Strom's note returned the answer that the laptop story had been removed for violation of the company's hack materials policy. And you can see the email there. Per checking, the user was bounced by Site Integrity for violating our hack materials policy, adding them here for further insights and guidance. Now, it's also worth noting that the hacked materials policy Twitter had, it's never been upheld in any meaningful way that I can recall. It seems to be a catch-all policy to stop instances of revenge porn. By the way, if you look at the reporting tools Elon's brought in since he's joined, there's now like specific things. You can report specific things like revenge porn and stuff like that that wasn't there before he bought it, which is really interesting because everyone says he's making the site more unsafe, but the reporting tools have never actually been better or clearer to use. But anyway, what's mad about this and what's been left out contextually is this hacked materials policy would ban WikiLeaks. All WikiLeaks do is publish hacked materials. That's what they do. That is their raison d'etre. It's what they're known for. But they didn't do that. WikiLeaks still has an active Twitter account. It did all through the Assange trial. Even, by the way, when Assange was meant to be extradited on dubious sexual crime charges. Nope. All fine. All allowed to have access to Twitter, all allowed to tweet their findings, allowed to tweet links directly to all their very hacked materials. I believe a month prior to this, maybe two, the New York Times finally made out that they got the Holy Grail. And we've got Trump's tax returns. Someone had leaked some of Trump's tax returns to the New York Times, his IRS filings. I can't remember what the number is for the particular paper that there were. And that is a crime, by the way, right? The New York Times published it, ran it. The New York Times wasn't banned, wasn't withheld. There was no pushback. It didn't. Nobody said, oh, this falls under our hacked materials. But nobody even mentioned that policy. It was just allowed to play out. So this was the only time I'd ever seen the hacked materials policy implemented at all. Although several sources recalled hearing about a general warning from federal law enforcement that summer about possible foreign hacks, there's no evidence that I've seen of any government involvement in the laptop story. In fact, that might have been the problem. The decision was made at the highest levels of the company, but without the knowledge of CEO Jack Dorsey, with former head of legal policy and trust, Vijaya Gadda, playing a key role. And I told you this on the last video we did about it. It was all her the whole fucking time. She's the one. Jack Dorsey, if you knew anything about Jack Dorsey essentially grew the company so big and got so jaded, he wasn't even interested in what was going on Twitter most of the time. He used to be out dropping fucking acid and going, like, hiking in the fucking mountains. That dude's a hippie. He's like a hippie throwback. He was more interested in fucking Bitcoin and crypto. He left these people in charge. She was the one making all the decisions. He was the CEO. She was the one on site doing all this censorship bullshit, helping out all her journalistic buddies, helping out all her political pals. It was all her. Obviously other people, but she was the driving force. And I knew it was her. It was always going to be her. As I said, anybody who unironically tried to defend Twitter's stance of suspending users over telling unemployed journalists learn to code, you're a meme at that point. I can't take you seriously. You are a fucking clown, right? And here's the good news, by the way, guys. There's been another round of layoffs for all those scumfuck journalists and all the big media outlets, all the people that have been lying for the past 5-6 years. And now you can tell them, learn to code. So please do, have at it. CNN are having mass layoffs right now. They're getting all of the shit cunts all out. Everyone, finally, chickens are coming home to roost. So go do it. But anyway, it was always her. She's the malevolent actor in all of this. And it's really interesting because you can see how it pays off. All of her journalistic buddies are all going, by naming her as the person behind the decision and the person in charge, you're putting her in danger. What happened to accountability culture, my friends? What happened to that? Oh, wait. Being held accountable for your actions is, let me check some notes, bad all of a sudden. Oh, okay. How interesting. So they just freelanced it, is how one former employee characterized the decision. Hacking was the excuse, but within a few hours, pretty much everyone realized that wasn't going to hold. But no one had the guts to reverse it. You can see the confusion in the following lengthy exchange, which ends up including Gadda and former Trust and Safety Chief Yoel Roth. Yoel was the guy that Elon was trying to persuade to stay on, but didn't, and he's now on Mastodon, crying about how Elon's ruining the site and undoing all of his work, and he's been given a fucking pity party. He's going around talking about how totally justified it was to ban Trump and how traumatic January 6th was for him, who was in the Twitter offices. Here's the email. Our team continues to investigate the origins of the material included in the report. And Trenton Kennedy, I'm struggling to understand the policy basis for marking this as unsafe. And I think the best explainability argument for this externally would be that we're waiting to understand if the story is the result of hacked materials. We'll face hard questions on this if we don't have some kind of solid reasoning for marking the link unsafe. And see, CC'd in all the people, all the big decision makers at Twitter. Will we also mark similar stories as unsafe? And you can see here, there's a link to Fox News' coverage of the New York Post story. And so, in other words, will we expand our censorship of this happening ahead of the elections? Now, I'll also just say, what's kind of telling about that email is, I'm struggling to understand the policy basis for marking this as unsafe. And I think the best explainability argument for this externally would be, we're waiting to understand if this story is the result of hack materials. We'll face hard questions on this. We don't have some kind of solid reasoning. Now, what Trenton is saying there isn't that this is bad. There isn't a policy reason for doing it. And it really stinks of political meddling. What he's saying is, if we are committing to this and doing this, we will need to be able to explain it when it eventually gets out that we did it and we need to justify it. He doesn't care about it being wrong. I saw loads of people going, Trenton at least seems to be, no, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about whether or not it's the wrong thing to do. He's saying we're going to get grilled by politicians eventually over this shit, or journalists, or someone. We need a statement. Let's all get our ducks in a row. What excuse are we going to use? So at no point in his mind is it even, I can't see a policy reason for doing this. Let's reverse it. It's, I can't see a policy reason for doing this. Let's make one up now real quick. So it's ridiculous. By this point, everyone knew this was fucked, said one former employee, but the response was essentially to err on the side of continuing to err. Joel Roth there, the policy basis is hacked materials. Though as discussed, this is an emerging situation where the facts remain unclear. Given the severe risks here, and lessons of 2016, we're erring on the side of including a warning and preventing this content from being amplified. Now, I'll just analyse that statement in isolation, because it's super telling. So, it is not an emerging situation, and the facts aren't unclear. The facts are as they were reported in the New York Post. And this is exactly like what happened to me, obviously far less important deal, at Reddit. It's people above their fucking station, right? You've let journalists lie with impunity on your fucking website for years. And do you know what? That's fine. American media is broken. It's fucked. It can't be fixed. It's certainly not Twitter's job to fix it. And it's certainly not your job to police it. It's up to discerning readers to unfuck their brains and go out and check facts instead of just, well, red team bad, blue team good. You can't unmoron a moron. You just can't. And we can't get rid of morons. So they're there. They're real. They're going to be morons. They're going to get lied to and manipulated in really easy ways. And the media is going to exploit that until there's some sort of punishment for exploiting morons with lies in the media. There isn't. The whole house of cards collapses at that point. The facts were absolutely fine as reported. Turned out they were even right. The New York Post was completely right. Just didn't have to get involved. But they got involved because of the severe risks. What are the severe risks in this case? You know what the severe risks are. The severe risks is Trump being elected. That is a severe risk in the eyes of Joel Roth, who's the head of all of the fucking integrity decisions that they were making, all the safety decisions they were making. It's a severe risk. Trump might get a second term. It's too... It's crazy. It's so severe. Our candidate, our glorious party might not get in. Whatever will we do if our fucking center... If our center-right party gets in ahead of the slightly right of center-right party gets in? Whatever will we do? Whatever will we do if we don't elect a former segregationist? Fascism will happen. Democracy will fall. They're all just fucking morons, man. They've just been... They're just so far out to lunch, the average American. Like, it's fucking unreal. That's a severe risk. And the lessons of 2016? Again, What does he mean by that? The lessons of 2016. That was when all that fucking, you know, Hillary Clinton's emails got mentioned at the last minute and maybe she was going to get investigated for impropriety. That's what he's referring to. Because, again, in the sacred and holy canonical texts of the DNC, which is a political party slash form of religious zealotry at this point, the texts go like this. Yea, St. Clinton, for it was her turn to be our first Madam President. However, she was defied by the cruel Robert Mueller, who did imply that she, a saint who walked upon earth and would never befoul politics with any corruption, had indeed transgressed and broken some rules. And by the mere intimation that he would look at this, it skewed the voting along with the evil, dark Vladimir Putin. It skewed the voting so much that it let the orange man in. By the way, guy in the chat, Mr. What, right? Clinton has nothing to do with this story. The risks and lessons of 2016. He's talking about Clinton, not me, you fucking moron. Stay away from politics, because cretins like you go out and fuck it all up for people with an IQ. Stop. Just stop. This isn't for... You can't deal with any of this. You can't deal with this. You need to unfuck your brain first, then come back. That's what the lessons of 2016 are, you prat, you prick, you moron. Fuck off. We're erring on the side of including a warning and preventing this content from being amplified. What is the warning that will come up, says Gary. Again, no pushback. New. When you click the link, you'll see the generic unsafe URL message references spam, malware, and violations of the Twitter rules. Not ideal, but it's the only thing we have. Ian Plunkett. New. Whatever we do in the comms, this will become a bias claim for Jack pre-hearing immediately. Let's make it clear we're proactively but cautiously interpreting this through the lens of our hacked materials policy and allowing the link with a warning and significant reduction of spread. So, in other words, whatever we do, we're going to get grilled. Let's try and cover our ass, but let's just do it anyway. At no point is anyone going to take a backward step on this. Right. Former VP of Global Comms, Brandon Borman, asks, can we truthfully claim that this is part of the policy? That's a valid question. It took this long to ask it, though. To Ian's point, can we truthfully claim that this is part of the policy, i.e. as part of our approach to addressing potentially hacked materials? We are limiting visibility of related stories on Twitter while our investigation is ongoing, which, of course, it isn't that. And what investigation? And who are you to investigate it? The New York Post journalist has investigated it. As I said, Twitter's never... You didn't suppress the Steele dossier, which was a complete lie. You didn't suppress CNN when they got that fucking story about Manafort's Russian bank or whatever the fuck it was that got three journalists fired. You've never suppressed a single solitary piece of misinformation from one of the mainstream media outlets. So why you suddenly decide to do it? Well, again, yeah, we know why. To which former Deputy General Counsel Jim Baker seems to advise staying the non-course because caution is warranted. I support the conclusion that we need more facts to assess whether the materials were hacked. At this stage, however, it is reasonable for us to assume that there may have been and that caution is warranted. There are some facts that indicate the materials have been hacked, while there are others indicating that the computer was either abandoned and or the owner consented to allow the repair shop to access it for at least some purposes. We simply need more information. And again, the only people that were talking about it being hacked were the fucking Intel operatives working for the DNC, DNC operatives, Biden party members, and the Twitter loonies themselves. Yep, that was another good example there. The second watermelon. Yeah, that was when Trump's old lawyer, they said he was in, he'd gone to the Czech Republic or something. And to meet a Russian person, and he just showed his passport and there was no stamp. He's like, never been there, sorry. Yeah, just loads. They never suppressed a single wrong story about Trump. I'm going to go back and do an Enemy of the People on the second year Trump was in office, because obviously the first episode of that is me talking about all of the times the media was wrong. You know, Twitter, nowhere to be seen at any point for that. A fundamental problem with tech companies and content moderation, many people in charge of speech know, care little about speech, and have to be told the basics by outsiders. To wit, in one humorous exchange on day one, Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna reaches out to Gada to gently suggest she hop on her phone to talk about the backlash RE speech. Khanna was the only Democrat official I could find in the files who expressed any concern. Gada replies quickly, immediately diving in the weeds of Twitter policy, unaware Khanna is more worried about the Bill of Rights. You can see here what Vijaya has to say. Thank you for reaching out, and we appreciate the heads up. We put out a clarifying thread of tweets earlier this evening to explain our policy around the posting of private information and linking directly to hacked materials. The press secretary's account was not permanently suspended. We requested that she delete the tweet containing material that is in violation of our rules, and her account is restricted until she complies. I'd be happy to jump on the phone if helpful. My team in DC, Jessica and Lauren, are also copied here and available to discuss. But Khanna replied with the following. Said, hope you're well, but this seems a violation of the First Amendment principles. If there is a hack of classified information or other information that could expose a serious war crime, and the New York Times was to publish it, I think the New York Times should have that right. A journalist should not be held accountable for the illegal actions of the source unless they actively aided the hack. And indeed, this is like a standard that we're all taught, you know, when you learn, when you get to the ethics class, when you study in journalism. You can't encourage any wrongdoing or any law breaking. So, for example, you as a journalist can't say to somebody, like, if I know a hacker, I can't say, oh, hack this dude's computer or hack this guy's phone. Or break into his house and steal his diary, right? I can't say that. If they do that and then bring it to me, I've then got to make a determination about newsworthiness and, you know, whether it's in the public opinion, whether I want to sort of like tangentially condone the heinous act, weigh that up against the contents of what the story will eventually be. There's all sorts of things that you have to weigh up, but the bottom line is, it's not like in court where they have this thing called fruit of the poisonous tree, whereas if a piece of material evidence in a case has been obtained by illegal means, you can argue that it shouldn't be introduced or considered because of that. It's like, listen, the information is there. If it's relevant, then shit, gonna have to put it in. But anyway, so to restrict the distribution of that material, especially regarding a presidential candidate, seems not in the keeping of the principles of New York Times versus Sullivan. I say this as a total Biden partisan and convinced he didn't do anything wrong, right? Okay, but the story now has become more about censorship than relatively innocuous emails, and it's become a bigger deal than it would have been. It also is now leading to serious efforts to curtail Section 230, many of which would have been a mistake. I believe Twitter itself should curtail what it recommends or puts in trending news, and your policy against QAnon groups is all good. It's a hard balance. But in the heat of a presidential campaign, restricting dissemination of newspaper articles, even if the New York Post is far right, which, again, I wouldn't classify the New York Post as far right, it's conservative leaning, seems like it will invite more backlash than it will do good. Please keep this communication between just us and Jack, and no need to CC the team or forward to them. I just wanted to offer my 2 cents. Within a day, the head of public policy, Lauren Culbertson, receives a ghastly letter report from Carl Szabo of the research firm NetChoice, which had already polled 12 members of Congress, 9 R's and 3 Democrats, from the House Judiciary Committee to Representative Judy Chu's office. And you can see there, NetChoice's Chris Marchese met informally with 9 Republican, 3 Democrat House staffers to gather intel about Facebook and Twitter and the New York Post story, meaning that there's a committee coming down the pipeline. NetChoice lets Twitter know a bloodbath awaits in the upcoming Hill hearings, with members saying it's a tipping point, complaining tech has grown so big they can't even regulate themselves, so government may need to intervene. Szabo reports to Twitter that some Hill figures are characterizing the laptop story as tech's Access Hollywood moment. Then Twitter files continued. The First Amendment isn't absolute. Szabo's letter contains chilling passages relaying Democratic lawmakers' attitudes. They want more moderation, and as for the Bill of Rights, it's not absolute. This is the extract there. The Democrats, meanwhile, complain that the companies are inept. They let conservatives muddy the waters and make the Biden campaign look corrupt, even though Biden is innocent. They link this to Hillary Clinton's email scandal. Oh, is that why I was mentioning it? Is that why I was talking about it, mate? Fuck me. How are people so stupid? She did nothing wrong, but because the press wouldn't let the story go, it became a scandal far out of proportion. In their mind, social media is doing the same thing. It doesn't moderate enough harmful content, so when it does, like it did yesterday, it becomes a story. If the companies moderated more, conservatives wouldn't even think to use social media for disinformation, misinformation, or otherwise. And this is the partisan split in the way they think about it. Democrats believe these tech companies don't fucking moderate enough because they don't like... And look, I've seen it. I've seen out-and-out lies and wild speculation and fucking, you know, going really far out there, QAnon accounts and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like, people are gonna fucking, this is what happens. People are gonna lie. People are going to tell lies, and it's up to an informed and educated populace to be able to sift through the lies and discern the truth. That's all there is to it. It shouldn't be at the behest of like a few tech companies to heavily favor one political party and not press them on their lies while shutting down the lies of the other party. Like, all lies are bad, but you're only shutting down lies one way. The Democrats were in agreement. Social media needs to moderate more because they're corrupting democracy and making all truth relative. When pushed on how the government might insist on that, consistent with the First Amendment, they demurred. The First Amendment isn't absolute. And then he goes on. An amazing subplot of the Twitter Hunter Biden laptop affair was how much was done without the knowledge of CEO Jack Dorsey and how long it took for the situation to get unfucked, as one ex-employee put it. Even after Dorsey jumped in, there are multiple instances in the files of Dorsey intervening to question suspensions and other moderation actions for accounts across the political spectrum. Now, what you have to also factor into this is Elon Musk and Jack Dorsey are quite pally. I believe when Elon Musk bought Twitter, he said, Jack Dorsey is one of the best people I know, one of the best CEOs I know, and also said that he had an impossible task and even extended an offer to come back and be CEO of Twitter again. So having a little puff piece in there about how great Jack was, I never thought Jack was a bad guy. I always thought, like I say, he was just jaded and checked the fuck out and sick of it all and didn't really care about the power and the influence Twitter would afford him. I think he was more interested in getting into a new space like Web3 or whatever. He just seemed so, like, if you watched any of those hearings that he went to, he was just so, you could just see, he was just dead eyes. Like, he's just like, super wealthy man, billionaire, runs one of the most influential tech platforms in the world. And he was just fucking like, I can't believe I'm having to explain whether or not we shadow ban people to some boomer that keeps asking me questions about his Facebook page, even though I'm the fucking Twitter CEO. Which, again, that happened. The problem with the hack materials ruling, several sources said, was that this normally required an official law enforcement finding of a hack. But such a finding never appears throughout what one executive describes as a whirlwind 24-hour company-wide mess. Hi, owls. As you are probably aware, Twitter action tweets yesterday relating to two New York Post articles that were tweeted out that allegedly included pictures and screenshots of emails from a laptop that allegedly belonged to Hunter Biden, presidential candidate Joe Biden's son. Our teams made the determination the materials fall under our hacked materials policy, in addition to sharing personal information, so links were actioned. As you may know, this existing policy framework was launched in 2018 to mitigate real-time harm based on hack and leak scenarios coming out of the 2016 election. Several high-profile accounts, including press outlets, were impacted by this decision and were actioned. Unfortunately, the language that was provided in the product may have created confusion, indicating the links were spam or unsafe. Consequently, Twitter Safety explained the reasoning here in a thread. This morning, the New York Post tweeted additional links to stories that contain pictures and screenshots of emails that we also actioned. The teams determined that a Trump campaign tweet that previously was actioned for containing personal information would not be reactioned when it was retweeted without the personal information blurred. I know there are questions that you probably have and are also probably getting a lot of incoming from stakeholders, government, academics, civil society, etc. The last 24 hours certainly have been a whirlwind with lots of curves and unknowns, and we fully expect that the issues surrounding the matter will continue to swirl in the coming days. So thank you everyone for your patience. And you can see Matt finished off by saying it's been a whirlwind 96 hours for me too. There is much more to come, including answers to questions about issues like shadow banning, boosting, follow accounts, the fate of various individual accounts, and more. These issues are not limited to the political right. Good night, everyone. Thanks to all those who picked up the phone in the last few days. So, in other words, I stayed up, like so many of you, and wasted my fucking time, because those emails confirmed what I knew, what I said at the time, what I said in my video at the time, what I did in the stream. It was just obvious what had occurred. All of these tech platforms operate the same way. They keep their rules deliberately vague and flexible, so if they ever need to step over a threshold that would be otherwise unpalatable, they've got the linguistic backup of a vague term of service so they can justify it to anyone they need to. It's always been like that. Every tech platform you sign up to, they can just ban you in a fucking heartbeat for any reason they like. You can't do shit about it. That's life. And that doesn't change the further up the food chain you get. All that happens is it becomes an international fucking news story if you happen to be the son of a presidential candidate. It's just a joke. But anyway, stayed up for that. And it is, I don't want to say a nothing burger. It's not a nothing burger. It proves conclusively, once and for all, what everybody should have known anyway. And it shouldn't shock or surprise anybody. But, you know, say la vie. The reaction, as you can imagine, was just filled with pathetic and petulance. I was watching it in real time as it happened. Like, there were just so many pathetic journalist reactions to what happened. I mean, particularly what people were upset about was why Matt Taibbi? Why has he got the opportunity to do this? I don't know. Just ridiculous. Ahead of everything being released, all the old fucking blue check DNC operatives were at work. You can see here his David Corn. In preparation, please read my original piece on the Hunter Biden laptop. The big issue was that the New York Post and Giuliani used the existence of the laptop and iffy material on it to advance Russian disinfo concocted to hurt Biden and help Trump. That's what he published over at Mother Jones. Crazy to think Mother Jones used to be a Pulitzer. a Pulitzer-winning publication. They were great when they started. Now, of course, it's just Orange Man Bad over and over and over and over again. But yeah, there you go. In preparation, guys, just before you read the definitive account of what happened on that day, why not read this article by me, somebody that didn't know what happened that day, who was writing it from the perspective of someone that was trying to carry water for a particular political party? Just prep. Make sure you read this first. Pretty pathetic. Ben Collins, who had literally just days ago. I'll probably advance doing a quick fire episode of Enemy of the People just on this. But this is Ben Collins. Ben Collins is a clown of the highest order, one of the most partisan hacks. You know, he's no Taylor Lorenz. He's not that much of a joke. But he's right up there with the worst of them. And anyway, Ben Collins works at NBC News. Ben Collins was just recently at the center of a storm because obviously there was that horrible mass shooting at a gay club where, you know, multiple people died. And this guy rushed out, rushed onto the news, full fucking ghoul mode, to cash in on it and say it was all the fault of Tucker Carlson and Fox News, and that the guy that did the shooting was 100% radicalized by Fox News and right-wing media. And then it turned out that the guy was serially mentally ill, had been arrested multiple times for threatening, like, bomb scares and stuff like this, was identifying as non-binary, and had been specifically bullied, and had been bullied for years on the internet, right? And was known, had, like, their own Kiwi Farms thread and all of that stuff. To which Ben Collins then, after getting his story completely wrong, not checking any of the facts, he then pivoted and basically started posting that information and said, maybe the shooter is a victim in all of this too. Incredible, really. And he didn't even skip a beat. Now, that type of misconduct from a journalist, that used to get you fucking fired. But, there's no repercussions in the American media landscape. He just gets to go and do another appearance on MSNBC or CNN. And now he tries to take the moral high ground about Matt Taibbi, which you're going to see a lot of, this journalistic tantrum. So you can see, imagine throwing it all away to do PR work for the richest person in the world, humiliating shit. And you can see he then wrote Speak Truth to Power with some asterisks, and it was tweet selective leaks from the richest man in the world for power, is what he's saying. Embarrassing. There was Andrew Kerr from Free Beacon. He said the context is important to know what the removed tweets were. And he said that the removed tweets were showing people having showing Hunter Biden having sex, or Hunter Biden smoking crack and getting a foot job, and that it wasn't anything political. Don't know why that's relevant, but again, too scared to show the link in case people reply with it. Ben Collins also continued to bellyache. Elon Musk paid $44 billion to discover what we already knew. Content moderation is messy and involves whole teams of people with a range of viewpoints trying to appease different political factions. He then gave leaks to a Substack man. You can see he's using that as a pejorative there to present it as a blockbuster. I've done a video on this. There's nothing network journalists hate more than people with successful Substacks. They've attacked Substack repeatedly. Again, go look at this. It's on a YouTube video. It's called, like, Journalists Come for Substack or something like that. Because what Substack does is Substack and allows you to get out of a newsroom, out from a partisan editor, and ultimately, if you're big enough and have compelling copy and people want to read what you've got to say on particular topics, it makes you way more fucking money than what you would get. I mean, seriously, guys, like, network media jobs, they're not being a journalist. It's still, like, unless you're one of the very, very top guys, it ain't what you think it is. And these guys fucking hate it. They hate seeing someone with a fucking Substack with millions of subscribers, because at the end of the day, what they make in a month, it could be, like, what Glenn Greenwald makes in a month is probably akin to his fucking annual salary. So they seethe about it. They fucking hate it. And obviously, guess what else? You get to express, my own opinion. I'm allowed that, am I? I don't have to fall in line with the DNC. I can actually say things that isn't all. I mean, it's crazy when you think about it, because, you know, they did this as well with, like, Maggie Haberman, I think it was another example of this. You know, they Barry Weiss is another one. They take people who are on their side, right? They take people who are on their side in almost every regard, and then they deviate from the dogma just slightly, just on one point, just on one issue, and then they completely cast them out. They literally, like, I know. It's like the phenomenon. I don't know if you've ever heard about this, but like sometimes a flock of birds will just all instantly take a dislike to another type of bird. Like sometimes it could be like, I don't know, it gets an injury or it's an albino bird or whatever the fuck it is. And they will all just peck it. And if the bird sticks around because it wants to stay in the flock, they'll peck it to death. Or the bird has to fuck off and go on its own. And journalists, I guess, because they're not the fucking smartest, they fucking operate in the exact same level as those birds. They literally can't abide it. Once you just... I don't necessarily agree with... there you go. Right. Like, they were calling Maggie Haberman, I think it was Marga Haberman, I think they were calling her. They did Barry Rice, bullied out of a newsroom for not being woke enough. She was a vehement anti-Trumper. And then they go, okay, you bullied me out of my job. I'm leaving. I'll start my own Substack. By the way, nothing braver you can do as a journalist than, like, go out on your own. Because you're going from having a guaranteed salary and a masthead that will legally protect you against any, like, defamation lawsuits or anything like that. You leave all that behind and you are just banking on enough people wanting to give you money to read your words. There is nothing crazier than that. There's no bigger risk. But they do it, they're successful, and the fucking journos hate it. They absolutely seethe about it. Substack man bad. Wajahat Ali, as well here, said this talking point. Matt Taibbi, what a sad, disgraceful downfall. I swear, kids, he did good work back in the day. Should be a cautionary tale for everyone. Selling your soul for the richest white nationalist on earth. Well, he'll eat well for the rest of his life, I guess. But is it worth it? And I still don't even understand what he's meant to have done in terms of getting money. Like, I don't know if he's being paid for this story. Like, he tweeted it. He didn't even put it on his Substack. Like, he got a shit ton of followers off it. But of course, obviously, Wajahat Ali said, listen, it was good that Twitter banned the New York Post. His fellow journalists... Russian disinformation meant to harm democracy shouldn't be given mainstream platforms, of course. This is NBC journalist Jason Abruzzese, and I don't agree with this. Elon Musk said if the fact that the Twitter executives were replying handled and removing speech at the behest of Biden's political party, if this isn't a violation of the Constitution's First Amendment, what is? I don't think he's right there. I don't think that's going to pass muster at all. I think it's problematic and it's going to get talked about and there will be hearings and there will be committees. And remember, by the way, guys, the DNC ain't going to keep the reins forever, so you better hope they're in power long enough for you guys to, like, fuck off, because otherwise, as soon as the Republicans get in, you are going to get fucking railed. You are going to be on Capitol Hill answering questions for fucking 5 fucking years of your life. So, you know, enjoy it while it lasts. But anyway, now we're going from it wasn't real, the laptop wasn't real and it's never been published, Russian disinfo too. It is in fact Twitter exercising its right to moderate its platform as it sees fit, including taking down nude pictures of people who did not consent for them to be posted on the internet. So we're changing the narrative. So the laptop isn't fake anymore. The new narrative is, why should Hunter Biden have his penis being circulated on Twitter? Well, I don't know. Maybe don't get high on crack and leave a fucking laptop full of your naked pictures, among other things, at a fucking repair shop. And then sign away the rights to fucking, look at my dick. Bloomberg decided to go with, even as Elon Musk tried to build anticipation for release of old Twitter internal emails related to decisions to restrict access to the New York Post article about a laptop purportedly owned by Hunter Biden, material shared Friday broke little ground. Now, that word is completely superfluous because it's not purportedly. It's 100% his laptop. It's been verified. Even the New York Times and the Washington Post and CBS, they've all said now, yes, we have verified it as being fucking genuine. Hunter Biden's signature is on the ticket that correlates to the laptop. All the emails that were... There is no purportedly in this. It's his. And then, as I showed you earlier, right? I've told you this loads, but you have to understand, right? People say, oh, when these journalists all get together and they all parrot the same, like, tired, pathetic opinions, and they all write the same story, everyone goes, oh, it's an example of groupthink. But it isn't, because groupthink implies that in a particular social circle, we all believe the same things. We all think the same things. We've either been conditioned to think that way. We all share mutual beliefs, and that's why we're in a circle to begin with. We've all been taught something a specific way, and we end up, it comes out the same. That's not what it is. It's not groupthink. These things are coordinated. The media is monolith. It's an entity. It works together in tandem with very few people breaking away from it. And you have a huge monolith on the left. You have a not as big one on the right. Throughout history, that the size of that those monoliths change, obviously. But they all talk to each other. They all get on Slack. They all get on Discord. They're all talking to each other all the time, and they coordinate these things. It's not an illusion. You're not crazy. They've been doing it for years. They've been doing it for years. They've been doing it since the internet came around. There was that scandal, if you remember, back in like the Obama years, where major political editors were all talking to each other in fucking Google email groups. They were just coordinating it. That's all the coverage, all the headlines, and it's to create an illusion of substantiation. So it's not a surprise when you see things like this, right? This is the talking point, all aimed at Substack man. Mehdi Hassan, imagine volunteering to do online PR for the world's richest man on a Friday night in service of nakedly and cynically right-wing narratives and then pretending you're speaking truth to power. We've already seen that one. Matt Taibbi, he always was and still remains a fraud, a bald fraud. Doing PR for the richest person in the world should come as no surprise. Simon Owens, from calling Goldman Sachs a vampire squid to giving free PR to the world's richest billionaire. Man, what a career journey. John Kneffel, the Taibbi thread is a great example of overwriting when you don't have the goods, but you don't want to admit you're just doing PR for the world's richest person. Michael Luciano, Matt Taibbi went from a fierce and intrepid journalist taking aim at the wealthy and powerful to do mundane PR for the world's richest huckster. Embarrassing. Jason Schreier, everyone's favourite games journalist. Editors are great not just because they make you work sharper, but because you can ask them things like, hey, should I be doing PR work for the richest man on the planet? And they'll say, nah. Tom Skocker, one minute you're scourging Goldman Sachs, the next you're doing PR for the richest man in the world. Funny old life. Bassi Etim, that's my read too, Wesley, that the appropriate policy people made a call without government interference and were later overturned on appeal. More curious about the process now. A journalist agrees to terms they refuse to describe to do social media PR for the richest man alive. Paul J. Garth. And now he's a grifter doing free, PR work and advancing the personal grievances for the single richest man in the world. Chris Hayes, you see Ben Collins retweeted a lot of these, Chris L. Hayes, watching some of the most famous, most powerful and richest men red pill themselves into disaster. Pretty wild. That's a comparison. I imagine what he's doing there is he's trying to draw some parallels between Elon Musk saying perhaps political parties shouldn't be demanding that people have their accounts banned on a social media platform, and Kanye West. Not really getting it, but Mike Masnick, not for nothing, but so far everything revealed is basically exactly what has been known for nearly 2 years and is basically how these kinds of decisions always work. I mean, why the build-up to reveal this? I don't entirely disagree with that assessment. The media's janitor, Justin Barragona, said, on his Substack, Matt Taibbi tells his readers he had to agree to certain conditions to do the Hunter Biden laptop thread for Musk, as if this in some way should make you suspicious about the reporting. Of course, obviously, you would have to agree to some conditions to what? read company emails, yeah, you probably do. You probably had to sign some type of NDA to go in the office. By the way, same people who used to tell me when I used to go, I would never sign an NDA, like, you know, in with a big company, gain access to a building or whatever the fuck. They always say to me, oh, NDAs are just completely normal. They're just boilerplate. They're actually standard. There's nothing nefarious or insidious about NDAs. Now, all of a sudden, no, agreeing to conditions, agreeing to terms. By the way, agreeing to a condition is an embargo, which is just a normal part of the business. Hey, do you want a press release? Please don't release that until 6 o'clock. Right? I've agreed to a condition. Brandy Zdrosny, to leap to political contributions as the reason the right was more often reported for rule breaking is just bad reasoning and really bad reporting. Good thing this guy doesn't have an editor. Ben Collins again. These are regular people and private citizens doing regular comms work and asking good questions. Unbelievable hack stuff here. Jason Palladino. Breaking. Twitter removed some nude photos of a guy that were posted without his consent. The horror. Subscribe to my Substack. Devin Helnan. Oh, sorry, Heinen. And that the current person handling content moderation at Twitter has proven by his actions on the platform to be a far-right extremist. That's Elon Musk there. Notorious far-right extremist Elon Musk. We saw Substack man earlier. But look, he's done another one. What Elon Musk's Twitter files have revealed so far is that content moderation at Twitter was being decided by a team of people with differing viewpoints. Now it's being decided by the richest man on earth with an axe to grind against one political party. A true scandal. That's the true scandal there. What's interesting as well is, and this is unrelated, but I don't know if you saw, there was a trailer that came out the other day for a movie called Cocaine Bear. And it looks like it's going to be another trashy, grindhouse, horror comedy kind of thing, which is exactly what I want it to be. Oh yes, I will absolutely be watching Cocaine Bear. It's exactly what you think it is, by the way, which is the tagline for the slasher movie Pieces, which is also fucking fantastic, and you should watch that. Go one of the best endings to a slasher movie of all time. Anyway, right, it's what you think it is. It's a bear on cocaine that then eats everybody it sees. And go and watch the trailer right now. But anyway, Cocaine Bear was trending on Twitter, right? And people wanted to see it because it's a fucking movie about a bear on cocaine. So, fuck yeah. And people were typing it in. Now, I want you to remember that Mike Masnick is, apart from being in love with Vajada Gada, as far as I can tell, he said here, look, Elon, we don't need content moderation staff. Our automated AI can handle it. Twitter, Cocaine Bear movie trailer comes out and is trending. Let's toss a help is available for your substance abuse PSA on top of that trending topic. How a tech journalist doesn't know, that comes up automatically when you type cocaine or any drug. It's something Elon's added. That's been there for ages. It's like, they're just trying to fucking, there's nothing wrong with that either. What a wild thing, like, try and link to fucking Elon. It's just everyone's brains are just fucking melted. Like, it's so stupid. There was, oh, here's another one. Another one. Sorry, forgot this. Max Berger. I'm old to remember when Matt Taibbi considered himself the scourge of billionaires. He met with us at Occupy Wall Street to discuss digging up dirt on elite bankers. Now he's helping the richest man in the world spread right-wing talking points. Sad bringing that back. And you can imagine what the coverage has been like. Nothing to see here, folks. I agree it was underwhelming, but it is at least a confirmation of what we knew. It's worthy of reporting if you consider the original story itself to have any merit. Rolling Stone, Elon Musk's big Twitter files reveal turns into snooze fest. Daily Beast, deeply underwhelming right-wingers on Musk's overhyped Twitter files. And subsequently, Steve Krakauer, formerly of CNN, I think he's doing the Megyn Kelly show now. You can see here, he said, the Twitter files are a fascinating look at the inner workings of Twitter and its coziness with power. There isn't a smoking gun, and anyone who has followed these stories for years shouldn't be surprised. The reason I'm reading this at the end is it's pretty much in line with most of my takeaways from it. The Hunter Biden laptop suppression in October 2020 is the story That tells us so much about our moment. That's why I made it the prologue to my book, Uncovered. Definitely plug your book there, Steve. I described the Hunter Biden laptop handling as perhaps the most egregious and obvious example of the elite censorship collusion racket between tech companies, government forces, and the national media that we've ever seen. Remember, the unprecedented censorship of the New York Post Hunter Biden story was not just confined to Twitter. The Facebook executive Andy Stone tweeted that Facebook was reducing its distribution immediately as well. And the media was absolutely complicit with the censorship. The MSNBC exec producer Kyle Griffin tweeted, "No one should link to or share that New York Post report warning against amplifying what appears to be disinformation." Remember that Maggie Haberman was trending on Twitter as Marga Haberman for daring to link to the New York Post while questioning the sourcing of the story. Just linking it was a thought crime. Here's a sense of panic among the press. Jake Sherman got his account suspended until he agreed to delete the link to the New York Post and groveled that, I wish I'd given the story a closer read before tweeting it. You can see there, he publicly apologized for sharing a link to a news story. Want to know how politics got involved in the suppression of the Hunter laptop story? Sherman also tweeted that he agreed to delete his tweet because the Biden campaign did respond to it, deeming it disinformation, so he complied. Will Kane told me the Hunter suppression story was the canary in the coal mine, and it was a really dangerous proposition, said Amy Chorzik. Seema Forbin said, "It's the iconic story about the tech industry suppressing a piece of journalism." And yes, it was, and remains so. But sadly, nothing bombastic, nothing dramatic, nothing over the top, salacious, sensational. Pretty much run of the mill. Now, Elon Musk has followed it up and said, "Oh, there'll be more where that came from. They're going to talk about shadow banning," right? Now, you remember, of course, Twitter famously said when being asked, "Do you shadow ban users?" They were like, we don't do shadow bans. There was a hack, if you remember. I believe Biden got his account hacked, and Trump, and there was a Bitcoin scam being run. Musk might even have got his account hacked as well. I can't remember. But anyway, we covered that. And they basically said, listen, they leaked a panel of all of the tools that were there, and it had throttle, shadow ban, like de-index. So they definitely had a control panel that had all of the tools that enabled them to do the things they said they definitely weren't doing. And so what does that mean? Well, I imagine in the coming days, as Elon's put it, you're going to see him address that. And we're going to find out that probably there were some political accounts being suppressed. Now, this is an area fraught with peril, because every single solitary grifter, be them left or be them right, will swear blind they should have millions more followers. People aren't even reading my tweets. I do the analytics and my engagement is so down. And it's like, maybe people just don't want to read your shit, mate. Like, there's some guy, who the fuck, what's his name, who claims this. He's absolutely pathetic. Nick Adams. It's actually so bad. His Twitter account. I'm appalled. He actually follows me. I don't know why. Please don't. Like, I won't do it. And he just tweets regularly. Let me see if I can find an example of a tweet. Yeah, here it is. It's probably one of the most fucking cringeworthy tweets. He tweets things like this every single day. Alpha males eat wings and drink beer at Hooters with the boys. Beta males nibble on tapas at Spanish vegan cafes with their wives. That's Nick Adams there, the alpha male. And he's one of the most pathetic Twitter users I think I've ever seen. Like, it has 430,000. He has 430,000 followers. It's simply awful. But anyway, this loser, he's a prime example of the grifter and what they say. Says it all the time. Help, help, I'm being shadow banned. Help, help. I've done the analytics. My engagement is down. Help, help. Help. It's like, no, you're this. This is your content. By the way, if you've seen him, hang on, let me. I just want to behold your alpha male. Like, I don't know, guys. Like, maybe. Less time in Hooters with the boys, and fucking hell with them. You could work in Hooters, to be fair, mate. So anyway, I'd tip him. That is what, you know, probably the next thing Elon's going to get into and probably going to talk about that. Also, the Trump ban, right? We've not touched that yet. So there is going to be stuff that comes out, and it is going to potentially get worse for the former executives at Twitter. But ultimately, listen, guys, for real, this was a bit like meh, just meh. It's worth talking about. It's worth thinking about, but it ain't worth screeching about.